is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Morning. We're prepared to call the first case, 02-0236, Village of Lannan versus Woodland Contractors, Inc. Appearing for Woodland Contractors, Inc. is Attorney James J. Carrick. Mr. Carrick?
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is James Carrick, and along with Robert Claver, it's our pleasure this morning to appear on behalf of Woodland Contractors, Inc. in this matter. This matter comes before the Court for the consideration and interpretation of a tax exemption statute. The statute is Section 70.111, subsection 20. Woodland's position is very straightforward. This is an exemption defined by equipment and use, not by the user, the user's motives, or the location where the equipment is being used. In fact, these considerations do not appear in the language of the statute. However, they became central to the trial court and court of appeals reading of the statute and decisions in this case, which did not allow the exemption in favor of Woodland's equipment. We believe our straightforward position is evident in the simple language of this statute. The statute itself is a definition of equipment.
What's the title of the statute? What is it entitled?
The statute is entitled Logging Equipment.
So what is logging?
In our view, Justice Wilcox, The title of the statute simply indicates a definition in 25 words that follow. And logging equipment is whatever those 25 words say it is. And it's our position that logging in its very basic sense is the cutting of trees.
So your big timbo, for example, which you have a couple hundred thousand dollars invested in, can that be used? What's that used for?
Cutting trees.
Well, can it be used for other things? I mean, I don't know. I've seen them, but I know it has a big arm and it has a saw. But is that the exclusive use of that equipment?
In our hands, that is the exclusive use of the equipment, Justice Wilcox.
So that's what you use it for, exclusively, is cutting of trees.
Correct. Correct. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I wanted to finish with Justice Wilcox.
If we took a situation where we're taking something smaller, for example, a chainsaw, could the chainsaw be used in two different contexts? Certainly. The chainsaw could be used to cut lumber that would be used to construct a house. That's not a commercial forest product by the terms of this statute. However, the chainsaw could be used to cut a tree, which is then chipped, split into firewood, broken down into saw logs and sold to mills. So certainly that use would qualify under the terms of the statute.
In your use of the log, so you described the various varieties of trees that you cut, but you use some log. Let's say you might split some of the hardwood that's not a good grade, but the other logs you ship to various mills, I assume.
Correct.
Let's look at the statute. The statute says logging equipment, and then it says all equipment used to cut trees, to transport trees in logging areas, or to clear land of trees, for the commercial use of forest products. Now, if I understand your brief, you read for the commercial use of forest products to modify all three items, that is, cut trees for the commercial use of forest products, transport trees in logging areas for the commercial use of forest products, and clear land of trees for the commercial use of forest products.
Correct.
Is that right?
Okay. Correct. We don't believe, Your Honor, that this exempts every single chainsaw in the state of Wisconsin that may cut a tree.
All right. So it's all related to commercial use of forest products. Now, it's my understanding from the briefs that the primary reason that you're cutting these trees, and this is the issue. Primary, you're cutting it in order to have this land developed for building, right?
That's sometimes, that's one of the reasons. I don't know whether I'd agree with Your Honor's statement that that's a primary reason as to why we're cutting.
Your company might or might not be hired if there was just a lot of waste material there to haul it off, right?
That's a possible circumstance in which they'd be hired. I don't think that that is their actual practice and use of their equipment.
I understand.
As defined in the statute.
But, I mean, isn't that the principle here upon which you lost, namely, that you're really in the business of clearing the land, and that the fact that you are able to make money out of selling this product is really of not great interest to the people who hire you. It may reduce their costs, but it's not of great interest. They don't care what you do with it, right?
I mean, you
could dump it somewhere.
Correct. I think the court's summary of what the trial court and court of appeals did in the case is correct. We obviously don't agree with that.
So suppose you just dumped this somewhere and didn't sell it. Would you fit under this exception?
No. We would not be there would be no commercial use of the forest products in that sense, Your Honor.
So if you only sold it for a couple of bucks instead of a couple of $100,000 or whatever it was, or $100,000, would that be adequate?
Well, I think when you get into this analysis, Your Honor, respectfully, this shows the danger of walking down a path of trying to discern commercial use of the forest products by a subjective test rather than an objective test.
So it's really motive that you're saying. You say that it's irrelevant about the motive of cutting these trees was to clear the land, because that's what they were hired to do.
We believe that the motive is not an appropriate analysis for the court to embark down, given the clear language of the statute that simply sets an objective test as to use, not purpose.
And so you think that the Court of Appeals has put in the word primary between trees and for the commercial use. Is that where they put in primary?
I believe it's something more that has been inserted rather than primary. I believe that what's been inserted by the Court of Appeals is, number one, a business test. Even if you're cutting for the primary purpose of obtaining the forest products, the Court of Appeals would not allow the exemption unless the business entity falls under an undefined subset of businesses known as the logging genre. So to answer Your Honor's question, I believe that the words inserted by the Court of Appeals there would be for the primary motivation of obtaining trees for commercial use of forest products.
I have one other question. It's my understanding from Appendix 148 that you're asking for more than the actual equipment that cuts the trees. It's my understanding that what's at issue here is cutting and property necessary for business support and administration equipment, and that maybe a duplicating machine and maybe an adding machine, I don't know what it is, but that it's more than just what you hack the trees down with or use in processing it to sell this wood. Now, are you claiming that office equipment is also included as exempt?
To answer Your Honor's question, the position taken by Woodland in the trial court was that the minimal amount of office equipment that actually exists, a computer, a phone, cell phones, copying equipment, as Your Honor suggested, were instrumentalities of the exempt equipment, which is what is being utilized by Woodland to drive their business. The trial court didn't address that situation. At its heart, we believe that that's an analysis that the trial court may have to face at some point, that certainly is a cell phone a piece of equipment used to cut trees for commercial use of forest products. The trial courts could certainly conclude that it's not. But the overwhelming majority...
Suppose you win. Does it have to be remanded for factual determinations on which equipment is good enough?
We believe it would, Your Honor, because a splitting up of the equipment never occurred here. The trial court never got to the point of deciding what equipment was used as defined in the statute. So in order to make that determination, we believe that the trial court would have to reconsider it. Perhaps that could be done on summary judgment because, to be honest, we don't believe that there would be a factual dispute at that stage as to what equipment is used as defined in the statute under the correct test.
The question the Chief Justice is asking is a good one in the sense that if I were to say, well, I started out with a timbo, which is the big machine that cuts down 80-foot trees with a saw at the bottom and picks them up and carries them around and puts them on the ground and then puts them in, takes the bark off and cuts them in different lengths. There's a difference between that equipment and a computer and something in the office. So you're saying, well, maybe it should be remanded back because there was a dissent in this case. I'm talking about in the appellate court by Judge Nettesheim, who said clearly woodland is in the business because you cut trees, you process trees, but he seemed to go along with the primary purpose, but he had difficulty with some of the equipment and suggested that this case, because it was summary judgment, and you know under 802 we're talking about that the material facts are in conflict, that it should or could be remanded back. My question is this to you then, and I'm just thinking about, let's say I live up in central Wisconsin and there's a lot of farmers up there and the farming business isn't too good now. And there's a dairy farmer, which I know very little about, but let's say you're a dairy farmer, but you got a big woods on your property, or your neighbors have, and you buy a big timbo and you're going to cut down, but the primary purpose, I'm in the business of being a dairy farmer, but I have this big piece of logging equipment and I'm clearing land, I'm cutting down trees on my own or my neighbor's. Isn't that basically what your argument is, that if you're, the primary purpose, it's the XYZ dairy farm. In your case, it's called woodland, but so that's a little close. But say it's the XYZ dairy farm, but they have a piece of logging equipment. Would that logging equipment be exempt?
I would agree that it would be exempt, provided that the products are put into commercial use.
Yeah, well, commercial use means he cuts them down and they come in and they have they pick them up and then they put them on a truck and they go up to Consolidated or Kakana or Wausau Mosinee or one of the other companies. Would that be commercial use? Your difference is that you do ship some logs, but you also process wood chips and et cetera. But I'm just trying to give an example where they used a economic test. They said approximately 15% of your business is in this area, therefore it's not a primary purpose. Well, let's say the farmer, one year his the milk price, as we know, milk price goes up and down, and one year milk is real high, and that year his wood business is 15%. But if it's like it is now, maybe the wood business would be 60%. So the subjective test is what you're saying is difficult to apply.
Correct. The subjectivity of it and the concentration on a purpose or motivation rather than a use. And this feeds into our example that we raised in our brief, Your Honor, regarding the ice cream shop. It may be a silly example that an ice cream shop operates and 90%
I don't like ice cream. That's why I used a farmer. So I thought it was
correct. Right. Your example is better than mine, certainly.
Yeah. You don't like yogurt.
But the point is well taken that that's the danger of walking down a path where you're evaluating business intent, and particularly where you're evaluating business intent by a revenue system or by a percentage of profits. Perhaps another example for the court would be a large corporate conglomerate with 50 different divisions, not separate corporations, but 50 different divisions. And they've got one little dinky division that cuts woods up in northern Wisconsin and sells the woods for a profit.
No, I don't think that's what the Court of Appeals decision stands for. I think the Court of Appeals decision stands for the fact that arguably, your client is clearing wood in order to allow development of the land. That is the purpose, that's the reason, and that's what they're doing. Ancillary to that, they got a lot of wood lying around now. What are they going to do with it? They can not easily dump it and just let it lie around, or they can sell it, just like loads of industries sell byproducts. I mean, this wood is a byproduct, it is arguable, a byproduct of clearing the land, just like leaves might be, dead animals might be, etc. It's a byproduct. And that, therefore, it is not clearing the land, cutting it, transporting, etc., is not for the commercial use of products, forest products. I mean, that's what I think the Court of Appeals is saying. In your division argument, and in the dairy farm example, it is arguable that the purpose of cutting those trees was, and the sole purpose, was commercial use of forest products. And you don't total up the whole business, but you say, why were these trees cut? They were cut to sell them because you needed the money. Not cut because you're getting your money from development. Now, maybe it's easy in all of these examples where it's so clear-cut, although Judge Nederstein didn't think it was so clear-cut here. And there'll be examples where it melds, but that's how I read the Court of Appeals decision. What's the matter with that?
There are several things the matter with it, Your Honor. One significant thing that comes to mind with your question is the trial court found here that in its analysis as to what the reasons were for why Woodland was cutting, I think I've made my point that we don't think looking into the reasons is warranted under the clear language of the statute. But regardless, the trial court found that a substantial reason, a substantial purpose for what we were doing was to get the commercial forest products. The trial court and Court of Appeals turned this into a primary purpose analysis. Inserting the word primary is completely outside the realm of the statute. And in fact, all you have to do, Your Honor, is to look one statute up in subsection 19, which deals with mobile homes. And in that section, the legislature has said that the mobile home must be used primarily for recreational purposes and other things. Where the legislature has expressed that intent, a primary use, to the exclusion of all other possible uses, perhaps I might agree with the court if it said primary purpose rather than use. But primary appears nowhere in the terms of this statute. And given the fact that Judge Davis found that it was a substantial purpose of ours to obtain the commercial forest products, and it is. It's clear from these facts, Your Honor. We've got an 8-acre site in the village of Lannan. We split firewood. We make it available to the public for sale. We try to sell this at a profit, obviously. That is a substantial purpose of our operation. We would not make the investment in the types of equipment we have without that purpose in mind. So to the extent a purpose analysis is overlaid the statute, which we don't agree with, there's no basis to make that a primary purpose analysis.
Well, counsel, if we went with just the use,
yes,
as you're advocating, and the fact scenario was that the equipment was used 0.5% for that would qualify for the exemption. Is it your argument then that that would suffice? My question has inherent in it. Don't you think that if you go to the use, you're going to talk about primary use, lest there be a floodgate response?
Perhaps if a primary use analysis is applied to these facts, certainly Woodland would qualify.
Okay.
The equipment that's used by Woodland is used to cut trees, clear land, chip the trees, do all those tasks. All of the product, practically all of the product, is commercially used.
But you can't say, okay, I mean, maybe you can't. You can say anything you want. it seems to me that you are tackling and taking exception to the court reading in to the statute primary. And I respond to you, okay, let's say it's just use. It's not purpose. And if you come to me as a litigant in the next case and the use is for the commercial use of forest products, but that equipment is only, or whatever other exemption we're dealing with, but it's only used 1% of the time and 99% of the other time it's used for something that would not be exempt, I'm going to have a hard time swallowing that, I think. Now, maybe I'm wrong. But
let me try to help you with it. This is obviously a concern raised by the Village of Lannan in its briefing, that suddenly the exemption is going to swallow the whole. We're going to have every saw in the state of Wisconsin exempt, and there's going to be a panic. Stand down. We don't think there's going to be a panic. We believe that the court is certainly well-equipped to deal with a sham circumstance, for example. A landscaper who uses its saws all year to cut trees and there's no commercial use, and once a year they cut their tree, they lay it out in front of their shop, and they put a little sign up that says for sale. We think the court could dismiss that, and whether it's through a primary use analysis or not, we believe that that would be a pretext and a sham. And courts and assessors are well equipped to deal with those types of situations.
I agree with you, but the, you know, cases aren't that easy that come to us. We're not going to have the sham. We're going to have the 27% use.
Sure. And to that point, Your Honor, if a test had to be established, perhaps Deutsches Land would be instructive on this. In Deutsches Land, one of the things that this court said was that when we say exclusive use in the statute, we allow a use that's inconsequential or incidental without destroying the exemption. And perhaps the flip side of that could also be held true, that an inconsequential or incidental use without anything more does not qualify for treatment under the statute and the exemption. So that would be one way of addressing it. But clearly, I don't believe those are the facts before the court. I certainly appreciate the nature of the issue and perhaps recurrence of it. But again, I'd stress, everything that is cut is commercially used by Woodland. And the trial court did find that it was a substantial purpose, meaning that we were motivated by that purpose.
You make the point in your brief that I believe that there is no other, there's no case in Wisconsin that this is sort of a case of first impression in the sense of primary purpose, that the other cases that have looked at this have been function or use. And the only question I have is that when you look at Falls case, the one that was cited by the village as far as it would be the Menominee Falls versus rental, that do you distinguish that case of because of what it was, because it was a stock and trade case, which is different than what we're talking about as far as the use? That was where it was to rent, but because they sold, they were denied the merchant's stock and trade finished products exemption?
That's certainly one of the ways to distinguish it, Your Honor. We think that Falls Rental World does not stand for what the trial court said it stood for several reasons. First of all, in that case, what the court had to deal with was an otherwise undefined term in the statute of merchant's stock and trade. Two elements that were not defined in the statute, and the court had to infuse meaning to those. How do you infuse meaning to them? The first thing you have to do is determine, is Falls Rental World a merchant? And the court found that Falls Rental World could not sustain its burden to show that it was a merchant. That statute's very different from ours for a couple of reasons. One, and most importantly, is our statute does not say logger's equipment. It simply doesn't identify an entity who's using the equipment in order to qualify for tax-exempt status. So we think that the court's procedure there in terms of giving meaning to an undefined term of merchant stock and trade and the utilization of a primary purpose test to do that is perhaps supported by the way that this court has looked to and decided other cases that involve entity considerations. For example, one example would be the Frank Lloyd Wright case that's cited by, I believe, both parties. The court had to look in that case to see, is this a school or is it a business? And in our view, the proper analysis there is, what does it do? What is it doing? What is it using? And certainly in benevolent organization cases, charitable cases, religious cases, where the court has to take a business and see whether it fits a particular category, that type of primary purpose analysis may be warranted, but not in this case where there is no entity described in the statute.
Mr. Carrick, how do you get around the presumption that I think is in the law? As you know, Wisconsin Statute 70.109 went into effect in 1999, and that statute reads, exemptions under this chapter shall be strictly construed in every instance with a presumption that the property in question is taxable, and the burden of proof is on the person who claims the exemption. Isn't that a pretty tough presumption to get around?
It's certainly a high bar to reach, Your Honor. But we believe that the 25 simple words of this statute give rise to an easy test that's easily applied, objectively applied, not subjectively applied, and that Woodland certainly fits that test. We believe that we've sustained that burden. Obviously, there certainly is a presumption and a burden that equipment, property, things are taxable unless the exemption clearly fits. But simply because there are two differing interpretations or readings of a statute does not an ambiguity make. We believe that the statute's clear on its face.
Thank you, Mr. Carrick. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mark G. Bloom, representing the village of Lannan. Blum.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Mark Blum, and I am here this morning appearing on behalf of the village of Lannan and its citizens, and I'm very happy to do so. I think that we would agree with Woodland Contractors that this is a relatively straightforward matter. It involves a question, of course, of statutory interpretation. And the plain meaning that the words that were chosen by the legislature has in then coming to an application to a specific set of facts. The issue is whether Woodland has met its burden to clearly demonstrate that it falls within the tax exemption being pursued here. Put another way, can it reasonably be said that the use and function of Woodland's forestry equipment is clearly for the commercial use of forest products? And I use the use and function words intentionally. I think, as was identified by the Court of Appeals in its decision, that there is a history of use and function test cases. Greiling, the Lash Malkin case, and others, which laid the foundation indicating that use and function is significant in interpreting these types of tax exemptions. I would disagree with Woodland's characterization that use function do not result in a finding here that this particular exemption would not be appropriate. And the reason I say that is that you still have a materiality issue even when you're looking at use and function.
Mr. Bloom, how do you get from use and function to primary use or primary purpose? Isn't that a real change in our law in Wisconsin?
I don't believe so, Justice Crooks, and I guess I would refer in that regard to the Lattice Malting case. And at page 506 of that decision, the issue was framed this way, function or use test. Under that test, the central question is whether the structure is one whose utility is principally and primarily a significantly contributive factor in the actual manufacture or production of the product. In addition, in the Greiling case, the language at page 607 of that decision, and I quote in part, the central question is whether the structure is one whose utility is principally and primarily a significantly contributive factor in the actual manufacture or production of the product itself. So I think that these cases have necessarily infused this materiality component, this primary, this principal language, and that is essential to coming to a reasoned interpretation. The plain meaning, I think, could be perverted, as Justice Bradley asked in her question, if in fact we are in a situation where we are saying that simply having a de minimis amount of sales of a particular product, in this case forest products, firewood, whatever, that could justify the exemption being obtained.
But what about the Owens, Illinois case? That's a later case than the two you cited to us. And in that particular case, the court seemed to clearly reject the idea
of looking at a primary use or primary purpose.
It did refer and reject a primary use test. That's correct. But it was not framed in the form of a use and function test in that decision. I don't believe that that is the way that the Department of Revenue was arguing the exemption. I'd also point out that that is a property tax exemption case. This is a personal property tax exemption case, and I think that that is a significant difference in terms of how these two statutes are construed.
Counsel, let me just ask here. When we talk about primary purpose, the basis which you talked about de minimis use. Here there was, you got the books, and you looked and examined the books, and you saw that in your brief you said 15 or 10%, but basically when I figured it out, it was closer to roughly 15%. Let me ask you, this is a subjective test because you're looking at what products were created and what the income was, and I believe the income that year was 800 and some thousand, or around $800,000, and around 80 or 90 was produced by the sale of these wood products. Let's say, for example, the price of lumber has been down, but if there's a huge forest fire up in Canada and all of a sudden the price of lumber goes way up, and which can happen because just like in the dairy business or anything else, what happens if it goes up to 51%? What is your, I mean, this is what I'm concerned about. This test, this subjective test, seems to be very difficult. And for a assessor to go out and say, well, you're using it for de minimis purposes. And is that a test that makes any sense?
Well, I believe it does, and I believe that's what the legislature has called for here, most importantly. Several points, I guess, on that issue. First of all, when a personal property tax is determined, it's based upon a personal property tax form, which is filed indicating the value of the property as of January 1st of the year. Mm-hmm. So we're not looking at necessarily their books over a certain period of time, but a snapshot as of January 1st to determine what, in fact, is exempt property and what is taxable property. But more importantly, I think the statute here that we're dealing with, that, and when the argument that we're making is that it's for the commercial use of forest products. And so what is the end through which this particular equipment is being used? Our contention is that the end in this case is simply to clear land. And
well it's not, because I don't want to debate this, but it's to clear land and they produce forest products. I mean, that's what the evidence that you have, even in your brief, and both the circuit court and the Court of Appeals told us, yeah, it's clear that that's what they do. So it's not.
But the question is, I guess, and I guess my response to that would be, on balance, and if again, a layperson is reading the statute, what does the plain meaning say? You'd have to be able to say that, in fact, this company is in the business of harvesting trees for lumbering, for example, for paper making, whatever it might be, that the reason they go into the forest and they cut the trees is for that purpose, to harvest them for commercial purposes,
okay,
not clearing land.
Okay, so then when I read 701120, this is what it simply says, logging equipment, all equipment used to cut trees, to transport trees in logging areas, or to clear land of trees, which clearly woodland does, for the commercial use of forest products. Now, let's take just one piece of equipment. I've mentioned the timbale, mainly because it's the biggest and most expensive, and I've personally seen one run and was impressed by how they can pick a huge tree up like a toothpick and process it. But, okay, that one piece of equipment, clearly that there would be no debate, as there could be for some of the other equipment, that that is a piece of equipment used to cut trees, right?
There's no question that it's used to cut trees.
And it transports trees.
I would agree with that as well.
And it is clearing land, which is your point.
That's correct.
And it is the commercial use of forest products, because those logs that that Pimbo cuts are used clearly because you see that they've been selling those logs. They're not dumping them as the Chief Justice suggested they could do. This is part of their business. So what part of that doesn't meet the exemption?
Well, I guess I would part company with you is in your characterization of for the commercial use of forest products. To me, Justice, what the situation or what the statute is referring to is if you are in that forest clearing land of trees and incidentally you might have to dispose of what you cut, that doesn't qualify for the exemption. It's clearing land of trees, but you're not clearing land of the trees for the commercial use of forest products, namely sales of those forest products, processing for some other purpose or some other product. The reason that they're there is to clear land, period. And if the exemption had been intended by the legislature to be simply for clearing land of trees, they could have put the period there. My assertion is that the for the commercial use of forest products lends an overlay to the statute, to that interpretation of those particular types of cutting equipment, and requires that the assessor look into the issue of what it is that that equipment is being used for and what is the end to which that that equipment is being operated.
The next question is, but that defies the use and function test that has been required by the various cases that we have been hearing about from both sides, because as you look at the Owens case, the Greiling case, we believe that that's a Supreme Court case, that the use or function test should be determinative when resolving use tax exemption issues. So do you think that this adopting this primary purpose test would be a major departure from where at least we have stood for the last number of years?
I would, I guess, respond to that by indicating that first, I don't believe the Ladish case was simply a use tax case. I don't think that's the only situation in where that type of analysis is being used. I think what I'm trying to say is that a framework has been established. It's been recognized by this court in those two decisions I mentioned. It's also been used in the Deutsches case. I think we have the mirror image of that situation here, but in the context of a charitable exemption statute, what this court has basically said is we're not going to allow the minimal ancillary use of the property, which would result in that property being used maybe for non-benevolent purposes in some situations, to prevent the exemption from being obtained. I think the reverse is what we have here. My argument is that we should not allow the ancillary use of the disposal of the trees that are cut through this land clearing operation to justify the exemption in the first instance. I don't think that's the plain meaning of this statute. But to get back to your point of how do we get to the stage of evolving the law, I don't think it's a stretch to apply the use and function test here. I think it's been indirectly applied in the Falls Rental World decision in the reference there to primary activity, so that there is some history here of that type of methodology, that type of framework being applied in these kinds of cases. And I think it avoids and it assists the assessors. Right now, they basically have a situation where they're looking at that language, those 25 words, as Mr. Carrick refers to them, and saying, what do those 25 words mean? How am I going to apply it when I have an exemption coming across my desk? And I think that that by adopting and applying the use and function test and a primary purpose component, as I think has been read into those in the other cases, you will be giving assistance to those assessors to say,
you mean that the assessors are going to have to go into the books, which they would have to, of each company each year to find out what their primary purpose was? Because certainly Woodland, and I just gave the example of the farmer, of Woodland, of many, many other businesses who the primary purpose may be changing because of the price of the product. And you're basing that on an economic situation. Also wanted to come back just while you mentioned Ladish, because I had Ladish adopted a function or use test, and I'm just quoting, whereby the pertinent inquiry is whether here it was structures were functioning or being used as buildings and whether their principal utility was the actual manufacture or production of the product itself. So I looked at the Latish case as a use or function. So when I said, and that's what I'm saying here, that this is sort of a substantial departure, at least in the way things have been done when you, before we adopt a, and maybe we will, a primary purpose, but it just seems to me that difficulties that may be out there for asking the assessors to go out and each year determine whether or not, by looking at the books, how much of your business you've done this year. And I think that could change as the product. One year you may only do a small amount of woodwork, and the next year you may do more with the same piece of equipment. And you raised this, well, what if, or I think Justice Bradley did, what if you only do 1.5%? Well, there may not be any work that year, or the price of the product may go way, way down. Sometimes wood is way up. If you were dealing in red oak or black oak, the price may go from $700 or $800 $1,000 down to $200 or $300. Well, that makes a big difference whether you're out there with that big equipment. That's what I'm saying, the difficulty of applying this subjective test.
I understand, and I think it's to respond to that, it's important to keep in mind what Justice Crooks referred to, and that is the burden is on taxpayer,
and
they are the ones coming forward with the evidence.
I totally agree with that, that the burden is on the person that is seeking the exemption, and that's the way it should be. But what I'm saying is that we're having this discussion here today, and I could just imagine many people are going to say, well, now this is a primary purpose, because look at our income here. This has changed.
And it certainly could change from year to year. Woodland can get a contract from Kimberly-Clark to go clear a forest, and
yes,
the purpose of that is to clear that land for trees to go to a paper mill.
Right.
That would be an exempt activity, but that's not what they're doing now. And again, I think coming back to, it's their burden to bring forth evidence that supports that they clearly come within the plain meaning of this statute, and all doubts being resolved against the exemption being found. So in terms of the assessor having to actively do an investigation, what he does is sift through the information that's supplied to make his determination. So I don't think it's going to impose a great burden, and my personal feeling is, and when I spoke to our own assessor to ask him how he deals with these, he said that he needs some information, some guidance, because these arguments can be made. You can put a bucket with five pieces of firewood in it by the front door and say for sale, and as long as you sell a couple of them, arguably you've sold for the commercial use of forest products and you've harvested trees for that purpose.
But we're talking about a commercial entity that has been, according to both briefs, in this business for a substantial period of time, and we're talking about just the words of this statute and the, let's say, the tradition here of having a use examination, a use and function examination versus getting into primary purpose. And that's why I'm just questioning what difficulty and just trying to imagine if you were to buy a, you know, this is specialized equipment. This is not something that an ordinary farmer or anybody else would have. And that's why I believe it's in the statute, is it's defined as logging equipment.
Go ahead. Counsel, I want to stay with the words of the statute, the accompanying statutes. When I look at 70.111, I see I see logging, and I see a lot of farming, milk cows. You know, these are some public policy determinations about Wisconsin values. I guess solar energy is another one. I'm looking at the farm machinery and equipment. That is sub 10. And I'm looking at sub 10 because the logging equipment, farming equipment, and 10.2b. And it talks of tractors and machines and it uses the phrase used exclusively and directly in farming. And I say to myself, well, you know, boy, the legislature knows how to use those words because they use it with regard to the farming industry. How do you respond to the argument if they wanted to use that with regard to the forest products industry, business, as you say? They could have said used exclusively and directly, but they didn't. How do you respond to that?
That's certainly true. And the way I would respond to that is that they still put the language in for the commercial use of forest products. They didn't say it exclusively had to be for that purpose. But what I am suggesting to you is that the construction of this statute means that it must be primarily so. It doesn't need to be exclusively, but I think they were intentional in their language because they didn't feel it needed to be exclusive, but they still wanted to put that overlay on that cutting equipment.
They, being the legislature, they are aware of the word exclusively and directly as is set forth in the exception for mobile homes in sub 19. They know how to use the word primarily. But I look at the exception that is before the court here today, and they didn't use exclusively and directly as they did with regard to farm tractors, and they didn't use the word primary as they did with regard to mobile homes. They didn't use those qualifiers, so why should we? They know how to. It's not an oversight. Sub 19 uses it, and we're looking at sub 20. Why should we read those in if they didn't put them in?
I would suggest to you that the only way to read this statute and to look at its plain meaning and come up with a reasoned interpretation is to put a primary use type of a standard in place. Because otherwise, it comes back to the slippery slope issue that you raised originally.
I would also
reference the Deutsches case. Exclusively there, this court recognized that even when the exclusive language was being used, that we still needed to make a common sense, reasoned interpretation of the plain meaning. In that case, this court adopted a framework that said, this says exclusively, but to have this statute operate and make sense, we still need to recognize that if there's de minimis ancillary type of uses, that that's not going to preclude the exemption from being obtained. So I think this court has had a history of, and I think that is important to have these statutes be functional, that the interpretation that is given recognizes that these kind of ancillary types of uses shouldn't swallow the whole.
In Justice Wilcox's example of the dairy farmer who now decides to cut wood to sell for commercial purposes, my assumption is you would say that expensive equipment he buys just to use for that cutting for commercial purposes, that would be tax exempt.
If it is used for the commercial use of forest products, yes, I would agree.
Even though he's running a dairy business on the other side of the farm?
I don't believe that the statute requires that he be in a particular type of business, correct?
But if he buys this equipment and he is clearing that land in order that he can put in pasture or whatever in order to dairy farm, then you would say that equipment, and then he sells the wood anyway, just as Woodland does, makes as much money as he can out of it, that equipment would not fall under 20. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, I just want to understand that. Then, to add to Justice Bradley's suggestion about interpretation, 21 talks about a temporary structure used or designed to be used to provide shade for ginseng plants, doesn't use solar exclusively, so it may raise the very same questions that subsection 20 raises. I'm just pointing out that the legislature keeps using different words in this statute. Which raises my last point. I think you're reading two primarilies in 220.
Okay, I'm not sure I follow, Justice.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I think
okay.
that. I think you're reading the 20 to be all equipment primarily used to cut trees, primarily used to transport, and primarily used to clear land for the primary purpose of commercial use. And that gets rid of Justice Bradley's piece of equipment that's only 2% or 20%.
And I agree,
that's
guess
how you're reading.
That is a logical and consistent, and I think that's an appropriate reading of the statute. I think they could have stopped, and that the example you just gave, they could have stopped before the word used, and we wouldn't be here. But they chose, and there's economic policies, a number of other issues that come into play here. But the bottom line is that we're looking at primary function. I think that is what is important here and is what's necessary to come with a reasoned interpretation of plain meaning.
Let me take exception to the Chief's interpretation, with all due respect.
Suggested
interpretation with all due respect. given the nature, I mean, I don't have all of the understanding as Justice Wilcox does to how all of these work, but one thing I do understand is money. And these...
That's the difference.
Yeah,
I have no
right.
money.
She's got the trees. She's got the money. Yes, I understand you, sir. Go ahead.
No,
but this equipment is expensive. The piece of equipment described and the use described by Justice Wilcox, are you going to use that piece of equipment for any other reason? And that's why I say primarily for the reason. Are you going to use that $80,000 piece of equipment? And this isn't a chainsaw, you know. An $80,000 piece of equipment, then what is all of this
total?
Well,
it's about $250,000 piece
Thank
of
you.
Equipment.
Are you going to use... There aren't going... It's not the subterfuge. It's not the floodgates argument, are you? I mean, as I said, it's not... pocket change here we're talking about. I can't believe that you would use this very expensive equipment for any other use other than cutting.
Well, I think it's used for what woodland uses it for, which is clearing land.
Yeah.
It's not just cutting for some other purpose, for these harvesting of trees, which is the distinction I'm trying to make. I think the clearing the land, that is the end in and of itself. And to suggest that simply operating the equipment and even if there's a de minimis use of forest products, I think that's elevating form over substance here.
Let me make my question more precise. Can you conceive of any use of this equipment other than to cut trees?
Well, when you say this equipment...
The tree cutting, I don't know how to...
Right. The only reason I bring that up, Justice, is because Woodland has claimed basically an exemption for all of their personal property here, whether it's a typewriter or whether it's a telephone or whether it's a chainsaw or the piece of equipment that Justice Wilcox was referring to. That's part of the problem we have with this entire situation is needing to get to what is actually even arguably in the first instance covered under the statute, namely transporting equipment, cutting equipment, and so forth. But I think to get to the issue here, in this situation, we are contending that the commercial use of forest products for land clearing and land cutting activities, the primary function needs to be for that harvesting activity.
Counselor, right. What was the purpose that you think the legislature was trying to achieve by the exemption they set up?
Well, I think the only thing that I can add to that, or the way I would respond, is looking at the title of the statute, it's logging equipment. My suspicion is that this is a situation where the legislature recognizes the important aspect that lumbering has in the state of Wisconsin, the important part that papermaking and the ancillary paper processing activities has, and said when those companies make the investment to harvest those trees for that industry, which is huge here in Wisconsin, that we are going to give them an exemption. That's just my personal opinion. But in logging equipment, is in that title in the statute, I think it supports the argument that we're making here, that they are talking about logging equipment, logging for the purpose of the commercial use of forest products. I think that supports that type of a rationale.
So you think the legislature would have looked less favorably on a person that on a part-time basis to its major business, engaged in logging and other operations that produce commercial products, rather than someone that engaged in it full-time?
I guess I wouldn't use the full-time and part-time. I guess I would fall back to the primary aspect of its business. And again, I think that that's up to the taxpayer to establish and support in their request for the exemption. I'm not sure whether full-time and part-time satisfies it. I'm not sure that it's 75% and 25%, 80 and 20. Those things, the legislature didn't give us guidance in that regard, but it did give us the mandate that it has to be for the commercial use of forest products. And I think, again, the only way to reasonably read the statute is to add that primary component to it. And I think that ultimately is the job of the taxpayer to come into the assessor and support the argument and the request for exemption they're making.
What difference would it make, counsel, if you're using primary? What if you said, well, it should be solely? You're saying, well, we're going to give a little bit because primary means, well, more than. What does primary mean? What does primary mean in your opinion?
In my opinion, you would have to be able to say, looking at this business in all its components, whether it's its financial statement, its investment in equipment on its balance sheet, et cetera, that you could say that that is the primary function for which that equipment is being used.
At this business. See, and that's what I'm saying. The prior cases don't really say that. And you're making a subjective judgment. You're going to say, well, our business is, and I said, whether it's farming, making ice cream, whatever, if you buy a Timbo, I guess they're called, for $250,000, as Justice Bradley indicates, you're serious about going out and cutting trees. All that piece of equipment does say is cut trees. I'm not going to argue about the typewriters and the computers, but I think as far as the logging equipment, when we read, and we're supposed to read this statute just the way it is, not as we might read exclusively for, solely for, and I'm just saying you could say it should be solely, but you're saying it should be primary, and I'm just saying, was primary 51%? Is it 40%? Is it? That's what the difficulty, I believe, that you're going to have this court take on, or the assessor.
It would be difficult to anticipate what evidence is going to come before us to be able to quantify and decide, is it 51%, 51%
of what?
What I'm indicating is that when this case came across my desk, it seemed to me a logical way of looking at this was to look at the financial statements of this business, and that's why I subpoenaed them. But I think really when I'm saying primary use and function, I think this is the way it's been applied otherwise by these courts in the past, is that we cannot say that financially there is a particular amount that's going to be a threshold. There is no bright line here. What there is a requirement that we look at this issue, and the only way to logically do that to make sure that we don't elevate form over substance is primary use.
Primary purpose. I mean,
primary use and function, which I believe, again, in the definition of four, talks about motive, it talks about purpose, it talks about intention. All of those things come into play and it have to be part of the analysis. Thank you.
Wait just a minute. Justice Rogan-Sack, do you have any further questions? No, that's fine. I think he answered it. Thank you. Do you think this case has to go back even if you should succeed on the definition? In other words, did Judge Nettesheim have a valid point, in your opinion? Because you keep going back to the facts, and this was summary judgment.
Right. I think the response to that is, first, there's been references here in the briefs that have been filed by Woodland saying there are no disputed issues of fact, for one. Second, there were cross motions for summary judgment. What that says is, and I think the case law of the state indicates that's a stipulation, but to answer your question directly, I don't believe it needs to go back for the simple reason that they have submitted the evidence on a motion for summary judgment. That is the evidence on which this exemption must be based, and I don't believe they get a second kick at the cat to further develop that.
You don't think there are disputed reasonable inferences from these facts?
I don't believe so.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Carrig?
Chief Justice indicated in one of her questions that perhaps there were two primaries being read into the statute by the Village of Lannan. We think there's a lot more being read into the statute here. We believe the trial court and the Court of Appeals have essentially redrafted the statute. Let me tell you what I think it says now after they have touched the statute. It would say logger's equipment, not logging equipment, but logger's equipment. All equipment used by a business systematically engaged in the logging industry or in lumbering, as the prior draft of the statute said, which is used on a large tract of land dense with trees to cut trees, transport trees in logging areas, or to clear land of trees, but only when the business uses the equipment with the primary purpose of obtaining commercial forest products, and only when the business revenues from the sale of such commercial forest products exceed the revenues from other sources. If you think it sounds gangly, we agree. We believe that the statute as it is sets forth a very simple objective test.
What about the typewriters or computers or what was referenced by your opposing counsel?
Well, I certainly think there's an argument, Justice Bradley, that those items, which really make a very small portion of Woodland's overall equipment, as reflected in the record in this case, those items, there's an argument to be made that they are an instrumentality of the used equipment that is subject to the exemption. That was never addressed by the trial court. It was not addressed by the Court of Appeals. It was not presented to this court in terms of issues on our petition for review.
Well, it doesn't have to be if you lose. If you lose on the quarter of a million, you're going to lose on the 3,000 computer.
I don't dispute that.
Well, I think Justice Bradley's question is an excellent one. It kind of feel like it's a little overreaching. We're talking about equipment here used to cut trees and transport trees, and we're really not talking about a typewriter or a computer. But what you're saying, well, it's attached, it's ancillary too. But what about the question about sending this back for this was on summary judgment, which I, the first question I asked, what about this going back and having a trial court take a look at the items that we're talking about?
I don't disagree with that at all, Justice Wilcox, and I believe we set forth in our briefs, we believe that that's the appropriate resolution of the case. Obviously, as Justice Crooks has indicated, it's a high bar to meet and overcome the presumption of taxability. We think we meet the bar. We think Judge Davis actually said that when he found that we did perform the tasks that are described in the statute, the three tasks, and that the resulting forest products were commercially used.
What Judge Davis did, he inserted the primary purpose test.
Correct. But we think a proper resolution of the case is, number one, a correction of the test. The only test is the test that should be given life from the statute itself. As we've looked at the other statutes, particularly different subsections of Section 70.111, the legislature has seen to it in certain cases to add exclusively. They have seen to it in other cases to add not only exclusively, but to add a description of a particular user that must be met before you would qualify for the exemption. Those things were not added here. So, number one, we think the test should be corrected, grounded back in the statute. We don't believe that the statute contains all the primary use, primary purpose, location of the equipment. It must come from a forest. Any of those types of issues should be considered by the court in our view. So we believe, yes, a remand to the trial court is appropriate to determine under a proper test and under a test grounded in the language of the statute what equipment of Woodlands is exempt, what equipment is used as described in the statute. And if a typewriter is not used in that fashion, that's fine.
I think you've, counsel, in your opening remarks to your rebuttal argument, correctly identified the major flaw in the Court of Appeals' interpretation of the statute and the village's interpretation of the statute, which is that it shifts the focus of the exemption statute from property to the nature and essence of the business. I think that's the easy question here. The harder question for me is, what do you do, keeping the focus on the nature and essence of the property, what do you do when that property is put to more than one use? In other words, has dual uses, one which is exempt and another which is not. That's the harder question for me. And how would you propose resolving that one?
I'd agree with you, Justice Sykes, that that is the harder question. And perhaps I'd relate back to an answer I gave previously, and perhaps something can be drawn from Deutsches Land in that respect. First of all, if it's a sham, it should not be allowed. If it's the landscaper throwing one tree out front once a year, it should not be allowed. But if the statute were to require that the use be something more than incidental, I don't think we would have a problem with that. We would certainly qualify. There's no question about it. And we think, obviously, getting out into the extraneous test is where there's difficulty. And
so you'd add primarily, substantially, or some word like that right after the words all equipment in subsection 20.
No, I wouldn't add substantially or primarily at all to the statute.
You have to do something on dual purpose. You agree with that. So you have to have some qualifier. All equipment sometimes used to cut trees, often used to cut trees.
All the legislature has said here, Chief Justice, is that the equipment must be used in a certain way and that the forest products must be commercially
used. So if it's dual purpose, it's exempt. Is that your position?
Correct. Absolutely. Let me also correct that. We don't think purpose matters at all. If it's dual use.
Okay, I'm sorry, dual use.
Correct.
If it's dual use, then it's exempt.
Correct. We believe that's exempt, but I'd also qualify that with that's not the case that we have in front of the court today. Those are not the facts that are presented on the summary judgment record. The facts that are presented on the summary judgment record show that all of this equipment is used in the manner described exactly in the statute. It does not have dual use and does not have that type of concern.
Dual use issue is not before us.
Correct. I'd agree with that.
Chief, may I ask?
Justice Prasser.
I think there's a company called the Asplund Company that I understand their business is trimming trees, taking down dead trees, trimming trees for safety purposes, clearing trees away from power lines, things of that sort. Is it your position that all of their equipment really is taxable?
I'd answer that with a question that I don't know whether they put the products that they take to a commercial use. If they burn them, if they bury them, if they throw them in a landfill, if they discard them, if they return them to the landowner, I don't believe they have completed the loop of commercial use as required by the statute. If they complete that, certainly I think the equipment is exempt. But if we presume that they don't complete that commercial use loop, perhaps it's not. And I think it raises an interesting point that if the court creates a primary purpose test to apply across the board to tax exemption statutes, the difficulty you face with that is whose primary purpose are we talking about? There may be a contract logger in northern Wisconsin that is hired by a paper company that owns 400 acres to clear cut the 400 acres. And they return the timber right to the paper company. It's not the logger's primary purpose to obtain the product for commercial use. All they're paid to do is clear the land. So on their balance sheet, their entire revenue would be revenue from clearing land of trees. They would have zero revenue from sale of commercial forest products. And that raises the problem with utilizing certainly a financial test to a primary purpose analysis, and in our view, a primary purpose analysis at all.
Chief, may I just follow up? You're suggesting that a logger in northern Wisconsin who's hired by Owens, Illinois, to clear part of the forest owned by Owens, Illinois, and has this equipment and does it and leaves the logs on the property for Owens, Illinois use, that their equipment is not exempt?
Under the Court of Appeals analysis, I believe that's a potential result, because the Court of Appeals said you have to look to the primary motive of the entity using the equipment. And in that case, very purely, I think their primary motive is to cut land and get paid by the owner. They don't have a motive to get the trees. And the problem I was trying to illustrate was particularly to utilize balance sheets as a litmus test for what somebody's purpose is blown away by that example.
That causes me concern because I'm talking about the loggers that live in Phillips, Wisconsin, that are doing this on all the forest lands owned, the thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres owned by the paper companies in northern Wisconsin. And they do this for a regular living as a subcontract, but you're saying their equipment, if they just leave it for Owens, Illinois, if they leave it for Wausau, Mosinee, then it's not exempt.
Perhaps it's not, because what the
Court of Appeals. Well, no, I think you're arguing that, too. You're arguing that they don't complete the loop, and so therefore under the statute.
No, Justice Bradley. I'm only asserting that that's a anomaly raised by the Court of Appeals opinion in this case. That's certainly not Woodland's position. We believe that their activities, their use of the equipment is substantially similar to what we're doing. They're operating in northern Wisconsin. We're operating in southeastern Wisconsin. The statute is not limited by the area of the state where you're operating.
Do you think that what you're doing furthers the purpose that the legislature had in mind when the statute was enacted?
To look at the legislative purpose, Justice Rogensack, I believe, is to look at the language of the statute.
Of course.
We need not look any further than the language itself.
Right.
And as we illustrated in our brief, the danger of trying to speculate on who did the legislature have in mind, who was the intended beneficiary of the statute, is dangerous. And we propose that perhaps the legislature here was trying to encourage recycling. Perhaps the legislature was thinking, we have a number of natural resources in the state of Wisconsin, one of them being trees and forest products. We want those utilized. If somebody has to clear land for a pipeline, clear land for development, or clear land simply because the paper company is asking them to, we'd like to see commercial use of that product. We don't want them throwing it away. We don't want them burning it. So therefore, the equipment would qualify. And if we look to how the legislature changed the statute, the Court of Appeals cited the prior draft of the statute, which included the term in lumbering, as some support that this statute was limited to a particular business entity. Woodland would read that completely differently. Woodland would read it as they removed in lumbering. They removed a requirement here that you fit a business genre. And what they inserted was a much broader set of circumstances where all you're required to do is utilize that tree, that shrub, for a commercial purpose.
Mr. Carrick, do you want to continue? Okay. Mr. Carrick, that was a long five. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Blum, before I conclude this case, I want to thank you all for appearing. As you know, September 11th is a day that Americans and probably people all over the world remember. And the court has held argument today, and it held argument went about its business on September 11th, 2001. In recognition that peaceful settlement of resolutions, rule of law, are the significant factors to remember. And although we do business today, we think about and grieve for the victims and their families in New York, as well as people who die of violence all over the world, even as we speak. So thank you for appearing. That concludes our argument.